This is Real Talk with Rodney Hyde. Tuesdays and Thursdays from 10 a.m.
Hello.
Hey, Brian, it's Rodney Hyde.
Hello, sir. How are you?
Oh, if you call me sir, I'll get a big head. Now, you've got to help me here. No. Your name, surname is spelled A-R-D-N-T.
No, it's A-R-N-D-T, aunt. But you say it like Aunt Mary. Aunt, yeah.
A-R-N-D-T.
T. It's German from way back. I think the original Mr. Aunt came in about 1847 and set up the first hotel at the Hokianga Harbour for the shipping coming in to get the cowrie.
Oh, wow.
Mm.
That must make you proud.
Yeah, it is. He was actually very honoured by the Maoris, was thought of as a leader, and when he died, he was buried in the Maori cemetery.
You see, this is a history, this personal history of two people getting along is not one that's told, is it?
No, it's not. No, he was considered a kamatua. I'm not very good on Maori, I'm sorry, but he was considered a kamatua.
What year did you say he came into the Hokianga?
I think it was about 1848.
Wow. All the way from Germany. It's interesting that you still have a German name, because they sort of often got smudged a bit during World War One.
Yeah, and when I started school in the latter part of World War Two, and I got quite badly treated. My first teacher was a German Jewish girl that had woman that had come out to New Zealand just prior to the war, and I got quite badly treated.
Really?
Yeah.
Isn't that terrible that you do that?
Never mind.
Isn't that terrible, though, that you do that to a child in New Zealand who's for 100 years had nothing to do with Germany, and you sort of hold this child responsible for Hitler?
An interesting thing, my father applied to join the Air Force in the war and was declined because he was involved as a manufacturer radio technician, and they were making the RDF sets in New Zealand to be shipped over to England, and they made all the radar sets. And it wasn't, he used to apparently go out and clean the front door off with the white feathers, etc., that were plastered on the front door of the house each morning. And it was in about 1950, the Auckland Star, that used to be there, published an article on the unsung heroes, and Dad was mentioned in that he had saved thousands of lives with the building of radar sets, which were sold as carotene additives, so the Germans couldn't get a hold of it. Yeah, that was what was said in the war.
So,
and people came up to Dad and said, "Oh, look, Ted, we didn't know. We didn't know you were such a good fellow," and Dad just told them to bugger off. He was a very lonely man. It was very hard on him.
So just to get the story right, he wanted to join the Air Force. He couldn't because he was
doing... They declined.
Valuable.
He was working on a project, yes.
Valuable
war work. Sets and then radar, yeah.
Oh, unbelievable what people are like. But he was alive to see himself in the Auckland Star recognised as an unsung hero.
And my mother, on my mother's side of the family, we're related to the royal family. She was a descendant from the Duke of Norfolk.
Goodness me.
Who was Queen Victoria's immediate first uncle.
I feel as though I should be calling you, sir.
Oh, no, I'm just a boy.
How old are you, Brian?
Now. I'm 84 and a bit now. It's a miracle I'm still alive.
Well, we've covered off about this lead and the danger that it poses in New Zealand and around the world and how it's insidious and invisible.
It is horrible, yes. I've got a lot of facts on it. I've researched it for a number of years now, and I've got a whole lot of manuals I've put together of research notes from all around the world.
Well, let's start right at the beginning, because you're lead poisoned, right?
Yes, sir, I am.
Tell us about how that came about and how you got diagnosed?
Well, okay, I started work at the refinery soon after it was brought online. I started it in early March 65 as a shift operator. I had marine engineering qualifications, so I was quickly accepted and very pleased to have, because they had to have people to operate the big 4,000 horsepower turbine, steam turbine that ran the platformer. So anyway, that was it, fine, and shift work rotated around various units on the plant and the tank farms, and one on the white oils where Platformit and light tops were blended to make regular and premium petrol. There was a plant called a lead transfer and blending plant, and lead came in 204-litre drums, and they were manually put onto roller beds, opened up and adducted into lead vessels, into the holding tank.
Now, you just have to stop me. I have to stop you there to understand this. So you're making petrol at Marsden Point.
Yes, blending petrol, at Marsden Point. It's part of shift work.
Yeah, yes. And they're putting lead into the petrol to make the engines run, a bit smoother?
Well, what it is, it's up the pre-ignition.
Okay.
Well, yeah, correct.
So this lead comes in into a container, and you said it's adducted. I don't understand that bit.
It was transferred through a suction program. You pull the vacuum on the appropriate lead vessel, either the tetraethyl lead or tetramethyl lead.
Yes.
And the 204-litre drum was emptied or sucked up like a vacuum sucker stick and drawn into the vessel. So I worked with four drums at a time. I had two drums open on the roller bed so that as one drum got emptied, I could transfer the adduction wand into the second drum and immediately replace that with another full drum and open it up ready, and then take an empty drum back to the yard and bring up another full drum. So I would do at least 50 drums in a shift.
And you would be assuming this is quite safe?
We were never told. There was minimal PP. There was a face mask that was an on-demand air that just covered from above your eyebrows and down onto your chin and your nose. It was very small and rudimentary. If you were straining, lifting a drum, and when you had it on and you sucked air in to open up the air valve, you could smell lead fumes coming in around the side of the mask, but we were told not to worry about it. Don't worry about it. You'll be fine.
And knowing what you know now, it was well known back then that this lead was dangerous, right?
We were never told.
No, but it wasn't like something that we found out later. It was known by medical and science people that this lead would be dangerous, was it not?
People were actively protesting against the lead being used and the amount of it. There's still one gentleman from the 1960s, 70s, a Dr. Horrocks, who is still alive. I still talk to him. And he told me about the protest. And he said every time we protested, he said there'd be an expert from Octel, which was where the lead plant was made in England, because they weren't allowed to make it in America anymore. So they had a plant in Ellesmere Port at the mouth of the Mersey Canal, and down in the southern part of England on the English Channel. And that was the plant was made. It was made there, and it was used right up until about 2022, when they stopped producing lead there. It's now produced in two plants that are uncontrolled in China, and still it is used.
When did we stop putting lead into petrol?
We stopped putting lead in petrol and for automotive use in 1995-96.
Not that long ago.
Not that long ago. In fact, this year is the centenary of when General Motors and Standard Oil proudly announced they'd developed God's gift to the motoring public in 1924.
Hmm.
It was the worst thing. It's now rated as the worst toxic chemical that man has ever made.
Wow.
It has a toxicity of at least 1,000 years. It's worse than nuclear waste.
And of course, the concern was, I'll come to your scenario, because you're getting it like the drum of it. But when it was in the petrol, it would run through your motor, go up into the atmosphere, and then land on the side of the road and be in the dust on the side of the road or in a house, right?
It covered the countryside. It covered the country. And they never, ever, the refinery, which was actually run under a customs-bonded area, so they were outside control of all government departments, they never notified on their Clean Air Act, and I have papers for, I've got some archive papers that prove this, the use of the scavengers that were blended with the lead to stop the coke forming on the exhaust valve seat and then causing them to burn out. And the scavengers were ethylene dibromide and ethylene dichloride blended. They were in a 50-50 mix, and they blended at 36.7% by volume of the lead used, so that in one drum, or put this in one shift, I would always do at least 50 drums of lead I'd transfer, which equated to 3,700 litres in round figures of scavengers and 6,500 litres of tetraethyl or tetramethyl lead, a huge amount. And I would do at least three or four shifts a month, and I worked there for 10 and a half years till finally I said, there's something wrong with this job, I'm getting out of it.
What years were they?
Something wrong with the refinery.
What years were they, Brian, that you worked there?
I went from March 1965 till early October 1975, 10 and a half years.
Just on the lead on the side of the road and in the houses close to roads, you say that lasts for 1,000 years.
Correct. It is still in the food we eat, like vegetables that are grown in the ground, free-range eggs. It's not water soluble, so it doesn't pick up, minimal pickup absorption into water. The scavengers parts are readily absorbed into water and would be dissipated now, finally, the ethylene dibromide and dichloride. But the you might recall as a young man, your father would, when you did a trip in your car, he'd look out and look at the exhaust pipe and it was a whitish brown powder film. Oh, he said, the car's burning so lovely and clean. That was a deadly toxin. It was lead bromide. You know the sweet smell that you get when you go to the racetrack and people love it and they sniff it and say, oh, that race fuel's got it, smells nice. It's a sweeter smell. That's lead bromide. It's come from the exhausts of the car. We're still using it in aircraft fuel and 100-octane race fuel. Every time a petrol engine plane flies overhead, they're crop dusting us with lead bromide, and it's used at a higher rate, and I can't find the figures because it's, they won't reveal it on their websites, of what we used. In fact, New Zealand had the highest consumption rate in the Western world. In America, they use on an average about 1.5 grams per US gallon of total lead and scavenger mix. And we used here 3.18 grams Jeepers. Of lead plus scavengers.
Why?
For profit. It was a cheap way of pushing up the octane. Nothing else. There was other alternatives they could use, but like a ethanol alcohol added to petrol will stop the pre-ignition, but that's quite expensive to produce. There's other materials they could use, but they're somewhat more expensive, and it was all about profit.
When you, if you're on the side of a busy road and you measure the lead that was put there from previous years, is it high enough on the side of the road to cause concern?
Yes. I know a lady who bought a house, an older house built in the 1920s, and they had a little baby, and she realised, and she had a scientific background, that her baby son was suffering, showing indicative signs of lead poisoning. Had him checked, and yes, it was, and found it was coming from the lead paint. And so she promptly dealt with it, had the house properly wet, sanded, and the paint all removed, and all fresh paint, and removed the soil around the gardens around the edge of the house where the paint shreds would have fallen off and into the gardens around the side of the house. But she actually did a sample down the bottom of a section, and she had higher lead levels, as high, down the bottom of a section, some considerable distance from the house. And I said, well, that was from automotive use, fuel use. She was quite shocked. Really, she said, where did that come from? I said, it came from the fuel we used.
Do they have a measure of what's a safe level of lead to have in your environment?
Virtually less than one in the body, no lead is safe lead.
And what about, like, this lead's around, it's going to be around for 1,000 years. Is there some sense that, oh, it's okay because it's not very concentrated, or is it a problem?
It's a problem, and they just choose to ignore it. I've got clear evidence. I have finally had a lead assessment done on my body by a Dr. Tim Muir at Te Ora Health Clinic down in Mapu in the South Island. He's quite well known. And I got introduced to him. He said, look, we'll do a lead test on you. I'm now having chelation therapy. But the initial lead test gave me lead levels in my body 5,540-odd% above safe levels in my body still, years after working with it. It's in my bones. When I had my teeth out in 2016, I'd had teeth trouble ever since I'd been in the refinery, and I thought it was just part of an aging problem. When the teeth came out in January 2016, all in one hit, as the painkillers wore off and the sensual sensates redeveloped in my mouth and smell and taste, I was aware of a very sweet taste in my mouth. And the nurse who was observing me, he said, what's the sweet smell in this room? I said, look, I said, I've got to go home and start taking some supplements. I said, that is lead coming out of my tooth sockets. My teeth were assessed by Dr. Malcolm Reed at the University of Otago. He was Dean of Chemistry, a highly eminently and well-recognized professional man. And my dentist in Matamata supplied some controlled teeth. He's a bit of a dental expert and has kept a history of teeth of people from Matamata, and he had them in age groups. And as I was 76 when my teeth were taken out, he gave me some sample teeth from old local residents between 70 to 80 years of age, some of their teeth as samples. They all went down to the University of Otago, and the levels of lead in my teeth came back 1,659% above the levels of lead in control teeth. Pardon me. If you go to IARC, that's the International Research Agency on Cancer, they have produced copious volumes on lead and other toxins and poisons and cancers. And they say that teeth is the truest indicator of lead absorption in the body, as there's no appetite of the dentine portion of the tooth. Sorry, pardon me. And they were shocked at the lead levels that I had in my teeth at 1,659% so against the normal control teeth.
My goodness, that's terrible. So for 10 years, you were doing these drums.
Or 10 and a half years, yes. I would do 3 to 4 shifts a month.
Yes, sucking this lead into your body.
Straight through, it goes through your skin as well.
When did you first notice health effects?
Okay, within 6 months at the refinery, I felt that I was getting a little bit irritable, wasn't sleeping well, felt queasy in the stomach now and again. Started to get some funny dreams. So I went to my shift boss and I said, hey, look, what's up with this job here, this refinery? I said, I'm not feeling the best. And he said, oh, look, he said, we all get like this. He said, it's probably the crude oils a bit. And he said, but probably the biggest problem is the random shifts. We do so many day shifts, so many afternoon shifts, and so many night shifts. And your body system is constantly changing. No, oh, I said, that makes sense. And then in December 1965, I was appointed to supervise the cleaning of the first final blend, the final product tank, Tank 61, which had regular petrol in. So the legs on the roof were put down when the tank was full, and then when the tank was emptied and the last lot of stuff was drained out and transferred to another tank, hatches were taken off and a blower was put on. And for several days, I had to go and check with an explosive meter, hydrocarbon levels around the tank and come around the portals of the tank. On the sixth day, I finally could walk through the tank and not detect any hydrocarbons. So what I would do, I'd go to the tank opening and extend the wand, which was about 4 meters long, in, and I was getting positive readings, and I thought, that's it. So on the sixth day, I could walk right through the tank without detecting anywhere of petrol. So I told the subcontractor, okay, I'll come in at 0700 hours in the morning and do another check. And if it's still all clear, you're clean to go in and start cleaning up the sludge. And it was like a sandy, rusty sludge on the floor of the tank. So next morning, I duly did that. It was all clear. And I came out, and here's three guys lined up to go in and start cleaning the sludge out with appropriate rubber squeegees and bronze shovels, etc., so there's no spark potential. And they're dressed in, like, deep dive suits. So I said, well, gave them the thumbs up. There, lads, off you go. And off went, and as I went away from that particular tank and climbed up over the bund wall, I saw the tank farm manager, a guy called Matt Mattingly, who was high up in the company's status, leaning on his car, waiting. And I walked up and I said, oh, there, Matt, it's all clear right through. And the guys are starting the job. He said, oh, Brian, you've done a wonderful job, blah, 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 blah. And I said, Matt, can you answer me a question? Why are these guys in these rubber dive suits? And it was for about 10, 15 seconds. And he said, well, look, he said, it's like maybe when they're squeegeeing up the sludge, there could be a little bit of petrol underneath. And we can't have them falling over drunk in the tank, could we? Well, no, I said, that makes sense. Well done, Brian. Off you go. You good job. A week later, I woke up in the morning. I'd had a severely bad psychotic dream, and I'd beaten my wife up in my sleep. I still remember that dream to this day, where I'm actually backed into the corner of a room with my wife and my little girl behind me, and someone's broken into the house, and I'm trying to defend my family, and I can't lift my arms up to strike them back. And I wake up and my bed is a shambles. I still get those dreams to this day. That's caused by lead. And I got exposed to lead. It was lead they were worried about in that sludge in the tank.
And not these petrol, are lead. Known effects of lead poisoning.
Psychotic dreams is one. Anger management control is another one. Balance issues, bowel issues, problems. So you see, the lead goes into the body. It's readily absorbed through the skin, and it damages the second and third epidermal layers, and it then tends to develop squamous, basal, and keratosis conditions of the skin, which I've had and still do to this day. I'm still having major problems with skin issues.
You had all this within a few months of working at the refinery.
I started to get it, yeah.
In 1965.
We had no health checks, no nothing. No nothing.
And did your health continue to deteriorate?
It's deteriorated ever since. I left the refinery in 75. End of 75. 1980, I lost balance, which is a neurological problem, balance issues. I fell down. I was bringing a tuna boat into Port Whangarei, waiting at the pilot station, Marsden Point, in calm seas. I went down at 6:30 in the morning. to start the main engines up. Pilot was due at 7. And I fell. I lost my balance at the top and went down three flights of stairs and broke my neck through lead poisoning, balance issues. In 1980, broke my neck. 1983, I spent Easter in Whangarei Hospital with what was appeared to be a bowel blockage. They couldn't find any answer. In actual fact, breaking my neck was a lucky break because the surgeon determined I'd damaged the nerve canal going through the C5. And he said, you've actually damaged the involuntary muscle nerve that controls all your body waste. And he said, you need to start taking psyllium, and that will help regulate and control your bowel movements. Now, I've always taken vitamin C from a little boy. My mother believed in it, and we were always brought up on vitamin C. I still take vitamin C to this day. I'll come to that in a minute. But it's now known that psyllium and vitamin C is a mild chelation agent, and as lead comes free, it helps dissipate it quickly out of the body before it can do any damage. If you eat lead-impregnated food, which is in your food now, let's be honest, it's there, like the MPI have banned the use of sheep entrails once they get to 2 years old. We used to have a lot of lambs frying bacon as a kid, remember?
Yes.
You hardly see it now, and steak and kidney pies at the pie shop. You don't get steak and kidney pies anymore because the lead levels in those entrails, sheep entrails, are too high a level by the time they get to 2 years of age.
True story.
True story.
Unbelievable.
I got that from Hill's Laboratory, who are the official veterinary health people on contract to the government. Yeah, so anyway, then I, 83, so I've carried on. 1989, or from 1987, I was aware of a bit of a pain issue in my chest. And like when I was sitting up in bed reading, and I sort of crouched over your stomach reading, I was a keen reader. I went to my doctor at the time, and he said, well, I think we better do an X-ray. A week later, I was in Mercy Hospital having a very large tumour removed from my left lung. Removed from my left lung. Mr. Hill, the surgeon at the time, described it as being very large, of a most unusual nature, but remarked, he said, Brian's lung tissue is in A1 condition. It looks like he's never, ever smoked. His lung was in really healthy condition. Now, it's now proven that traffic policemen, service station attendants, are prone to getting lung cancers caused by lead. Unfortunately, all my records have gone. No path lab reports are available. They've all been destroyed, deleted. I'll come more to that in a minute, a bit later on. So that was 1989. 2010, I became aware of like a little cyst growing on the surface of my right breast. So going the end of the year for my annual health checks, I said to the doctor, I said, oh, Steve, why are you here? Throw a needle in that and nick that cyst off, will you? It's getting a little bit annoying. And he tenderly touched it and pushed, and he said, no, he said, I think we are going to have a mammogram done on your chest. I said, what? He said, I think that's breast cancer. And it proved to be an infiltrating ductile tumour. A year later, in early 2000, that came out in January 2011, I had my right breast removed. Again, early 2012, I went for my PSA check, which I always got done. In shock and horror, my PSA had leapt up from an average running about 2, which was good for a man of my age, to 12.8. I had an infiltrating ductile tumour in my prostate that was 79 millimetres long, fully occupying the right lung almost to the point of bursting in the prostate. It was too big to operate. Pardon me. It was too big to operate, so we went to a oncologist. By that time, a month later, I saw him, the PSA was up to 14.4, and he said, look, it's too big to operate. All we can do is hormones and radiation. So he started me on the hormones. That was flutamide, two a day. And during that first month, I had my first Zoladex shot, which went on for 18 months in the wall of my stomach, under the skin, like a big cellulose slug of hormones that slowly dissipates. A bit painful, but never mind. It was doing the job. In April 2013, he sat me down. He said, now, there's been a peer review, Brian, of your tumours, your prostate and breast. And he said, we want to know what you've been working with. Starting from now, tell me what you've done. Everything received the answer going backwards. Wrong tumour. Keep going. And I finally got, the refinery. I said, some of the crude oils I now believe were a little bit rubbishy and a bit toxic. Wrong tumour. I said, well, for that, and I was involved in engineering, and then I went to grammar, good old Auckland grammar. I said, I can't think, no. I said, there was something at the refinery they never talked about. And it never entered my mind, and I even had a job trying to remember the name, and I said, it started with a T, tetra, and he burst, and he said, are you trying to say tetraethyl lead? That's it, I said. And tetramethyl lead, there was two types. He said, well, there's your bloody tumours, boy, he said. But there's no plant, are you sure? But there's never been a plant in New Zealand. I checked with Professor McBride, who ran the poisons register, and there's never been a plant in New Zealand. I said, really? I said, would that be because the refinery was a customs bonded area? Because we used to do shipping dips when we sent products around the country and loaded up the coastal tankers. And that was what the case was. The refinery quietly worked under a nice covering covert blanket of do what they liked, when they liked, and how they liked.
So that was the first time that you realised lead was your problem.
2000, lead was my problem. So then I came off, went home somewhat disturbed, and I got on the computer trying to find people that I'd worked with. And I finally got a guy called Brian, I'll say his name, he's a neat fella, Brian Tobin. He said, that bloody lead plant, he said, I couldn't work in it because I had to wear glasses all the time. He said, thank God, he said. Didn't realise. Well, I said, that's what's caused the problem. And then I found a guy called, let's just call him Bill, because he became a health and safety manager from the 1980s at the refinery through to the early 2000s. I've probably identified him now, but anyway. And I got him on the phone, and I said, it's Brian Arndt here. And he dropped the phone, and he picked it up. He said, look, this is a very, in quite strong language, very poor joke. Brian Arndt's dead. He was written off as one of the dead ones in 1977. Yes, I was written off as a dead man in 1977 with the rest. And at that time, all of the personnel employment details, work details, were all deleted and shredded. 1,500 files. He said, I deleted them. He said, that was my job, was to get rid of them. I said, no one thought to try and contact us.
This is just extraordinary.
Well, I've got in my research material, I've got an archive file that was done by the Public Health Department in 1979, and they expressed concern. Prior to 1979, they expressed concern that there was 151 men and 9 women at the refinery were deemed to be at risk of lead poisoning. They've all died.
And they never told them?
never told us. There was one guy, an instrument technician, who died finally in the 1990s. The refinery medics, well, I wouldn't trust them with a barge pole, said he died of mesothelioma, which is asbestos, from the lagging. That's what killed him. Now, I bumped into his son a few years ago now, and he looked at me and he said, I know. I said, you're Paul. I won't give his surname and difference. And he said, you're Brian Hart, he said. I said, that's right. I said, how's Dad? Oh, he said, that bloody refinery, he got killed with that bloody asbestos. And I said, really? He didn't do any lagging work. You wouldn't have Dad's medical papers, would you? Actually, he said, I've got an enduring power of attorney, and I'll get them all for him and give them to you. So amongst them, I found there was a biopsy result of when they're looking at the pains and that what he was in, the troubles he was having with his health, severe stomach pains and coming up into his chest and round his heart, and they did a biopsy of his lung tissue, and it was all clear. There was no asbestos in his lung cells at all. He died of lead poisoning. Now, lead in the body, it metabolizes into two ionic lead compounds that are highly toxic. They're called triethyl and diethyl lead. And the triethyl lead hits the stomach, around the heart, the colon and bowel, the liver, and also it jumps the blood-brain barrier and goes into the brain tissue and causes neurological diseases. I've also done research with Duke University. Now, you've heard of the Dunedin cohort?
Yes.
Rodney?
Yes, indeed.
What was the Dunedin cohort formed for? What's your awareness of it?
I thought it was just an interesting study where they do a long longitudinal study and just...
For like medical research and for drugs and medicines and things.
No, I thought it was correct? Everything, not just drugs and medicine. I thought it was everything, but I'm not an expert.
Well, no, it was centred on lead poisoning.
Oh, really?
I've got their results. Now, that's... Actually, there's three cohorts in the world, and they're all centred. Their results all go back into the Duke University. Now, the head of that department, Dr. Rubin, I actually spoke with him in Auckland for 2.5 hours early this year. He wanted to see me. I'm a walking miracle that I'm still alive. And he is shocked and horrified at the treatment that I've, or lack of treatment that I've been given, and wrote a letter accordingly, which was given to ACC, which we'll come to in a minute, which has been studiously ignored. Like also, they've ignored my lead levels that has been determined by Dr. Tim Ewer of Teora Health down in Mapua. I've had no response to it at all. Similarly, I got a letter from Kurt Strafe, who was the director of IARC. It's based in France. And they study a lot of toxins and cancers and poisons, and he identified in the letter that Brian Arndt will have suffered from triethyl diethyl lead, the ionic compounds caused by tetraethyl lead. And it's all been ignored by ACC.
How is that even possible?
Well, there's a conflict of interest. ACC in their investment portfolio, which is somewhere around about $50 billion now, I believe, they're the fourth biggest shareholder in the refinery, or now called Channel Infrastructure. The fourth biggest, something like about 4-point-something million shares.
So...
is that not a conflict of interest?
Of course.
And that's the biggest shareholder is the descendant company from Standard Oil, which they closed, disappeared within a year of lead being given as God's gift to the motoring public. and became ExxonMobil. And ExxonMobil is the biggest shareholder in the refinery now called Channel Infrastructure. I had a senior professional professor from Victoria University of Criminology. She was a professor of criminology. She was looking at a fellow that had worked for the Auckland Regional Council and was given a job of cleaning out some sludge pits that had been forgotten off the harbour bridge. And he got very sick with what was lead poisoning, and they couldn't figure out where the hell it had come from. And so it was an article and stuff. So I contacted him, and I said, look, I said it was actually lead bromide, which is from the consumption of tetraethyl lead in its scavengers, and it's lead bromide. It comes out as a powder, and it's a very, very toxic contaminant. She said, could I come and see your research? And I said, yes, ma'am, you're welcome. She spent a day here in my house. I duly watered her and fed her during the day. At the end of the day, she said, Brian, she said, you should be congratulated and given an honorary degree on the depth and quality of your research. She said, you've got enough evidence here that the refinery or Channel Infrastructure, as it now is, because it's still the same company, should be charged with three major corporate crimes. One is death of workers. Two is failure to provide adequate health and safety equipment and technical information on the standard of the chemicals you're using. And thirdly, destruction of employment records, which they've done. We ceased to exist in 1977 when the manual plant was replaced with a fully automated unit that was supplied by direct shipping coming from the lead company, which is Innospec at Ellesmere Port. She's not allowed to talk to me now. I've never heard from her since. I've sent her emails and texts, and there's been no contact. It's probably...
I am actually...
This call is being monitored now by Thompson and Clark. I've got clear evidence that they've been monitoring my computer and my phones.
Who are Thompson and Clark?
They're employed by ACC.
Oh, wow.
They're an investigative company that employed by ACC, Inland Revenue. There's been odd rows about them with their invasive surveillance techniques.
I am speechless.
I would be happy to bring my research material to you and meet you. I'd come in someone else's car and wouldn't carry my phone with me so I couldn't be traced. I got told when I got my first set of archive files, then they realised they were there and they blocked them, but by that time I had a copy. I was told by a head of Ministry of Health, who's now dead, you're not supposed to have got those files. You're going to have an accident if you are not careful and you use those files. And I said, too late, buddy. If I stub my toe, you better get on your knee and start praying, because I've given four copies of these files to very significantly important people. If anything happens to me, it's my insurance policy. He's since died of a heart attack, so I didn't send him a card for his funeral. It is actually corrupt. It is wrong. Can we now get on to ACC?
Please. The floor is yours, Matt.
Okay. In 2013, I tried to contact the refinery and got told by Greg McInnes, who is their PR manager, there was no such thing as a lead plant. I got hold of a chap, Bill, who gave me a photo as well of the lead plant being built originally when the plant was constructed. So after my teeth came out and I had this lead skin, and I think you've got a photo there I sent
yes.
through to Bex of my lead skin. I don't look very attractive, do I?
Not at all.
No. No. Well, I've had that. I've still got a base of lead skin in my head, and every again now it breaks out a little bit. And I treat it with face creams and that. Here's my memory wrong now. Oh, so ACC, they still denied it. And the refinery finally admitted, well, there was a sort of a lead plant, but it was quite safe. And it's gone on through ever since. And then we've got a gentleman, I don't like to call him a doctor because I don't think he is, Monogarty. He's their so-called medical expert and runs their toxicology panel. He's not a toxicologist bottom. He never was a toxicologist. They shouldn't call it a toxicology panel. They've criticised me and said, oh, Brian Ant's got blue hair, blue eyes and blonde hair. That's why he gets all these skin cancers. Sorry, I've got a passport photo taken in 76 when I was travelling a little bit for the shipping companies I was working with. Shows me with clearly you're having brown, curly hair. I'm not like a good wine. I haven't matured with, improved with as I matured. I'm now bald-headed. I lost all my hair following my neck operation. They did a fusion of the C5, C6, and it was a 12-hour operation, and that was covered by ACC, neurological damage, but they've lost those records now. They seem to have disappeared. ACC goes on, John Monogarty says, oh, well, his breast and it's just, you know, he's got the BRCA gene. In fact, that is true. I have got the BRCA1 gene, but very clearly the BRCA1 gene, and it's more common in women, there's about a 0.2% increase of chances in men getting breast cancer from the BRCA1 gene and a 2% increased chance of prostate cancer from the BRCA1 gene, but it throws a triple negative tumour. You often hear women getting triple negative tumours in their breasts and ovaries. It's quite common in women. The BRCA1 gene is quite common in women. My tumours, and they were clearly given copies of the path lab reports to Monogarty and his ilk, and it says they were infiltrating ductile tumours, not BRCA1 triple negative tumours. But he still blames that it's everything's wrong but them. It's nothing to do with the refinery, nothing to do with the lead. And then when my teeth came out and they came back out 1,659%, he actually had the audacity to put in writing that he has got lead-type fillings in his teeth. Even the Romans weren't stupid enough to use lead in their teeth. The Romans died of lead poisoning. That virtually wiped their race out. They used lead for drinking cups, plates. Their water was all ducted through lead linings so that they didn't lose any. In fact, it's now known historically, Roman warriors, when they're going away doing their battling, used to put a lead chastity belt on their woman so that they were safely locked away till they came home again. It's not known that very much, but it did happen. ACC carries on with Monogarty when one of my reviews in 2019, he actually said to the reviewer, which he shouldn't have been talking to her at all, that he gave a clear instruction she was to ignore the tooth report because he hadn't selected the control teeth that we used. And I promptly told the reviewer, I said, well, in actual fact, I've still got some of my teeth in a sealed specimen bag. If we can get some teeth supplied by an authoritative source, not Monogarty, and they pay for the cost of it, we can actually get the teeth reassessed. And they will show because there's no appetite of the dentine portion of the tooth. There's been no response from Monogarty from that. And then in 2018... or 2016, my oncologist told me he had retired. Well, in actual fact, that was wrong. He had gone into a research chair funded by ACC in Auckland University, studying cancers and particularly prostate cancers and treatments. in 2018, one of the guys that was on that, apparently the group that we were being treated with was an experimental one, though we were never told. They'd all had a five-yearly check. And he said, Brian, why aren't you coming to John's study groups? I said, I didn't even know they were there. He'd retired, and that was it. He said, oh, no. He said, it's a very big thing he's doing. So I said, okay, have you got his phone number? So I phoned for 3 weeks to try and get hold of John, only to be told nicely by his very pleasant receptionist, a very pleasant-sounding lady. Sorry, John's in a conference, or John's giving a lecture, or John's out of the town at the moment, whatever. So after 3 weeks, I used another phone, a friend's phone, and disguised my voice and gave a wrong name and brought me to G'day, my name's Adam here, and there's any chance I can talk to John. I've got this P thingy. He helped me years ago. And she said, yes, hold the line. I'll put you through. And he came on the phone very quizzically, hello? And I said, actually, sorry, John, it's Brian here. I'm not allowed to talk to you and put the phone down. It's been a horrific denial for me of medical things. I'm denied medical help by the Waikato Hospital because I went then, I got my doctor who at that stage was still talking to me. My other doctor up north that I had been dealing with, I'd just moved to Matamata, said that he wasn't allowed to associate with me, would be to the detriment of his business or his practice. Anyway, so I came down and said to my doctor here, I said, look, I said, other guys have had a test. Can I get a MRI check done? And he said, yes, yeah. He sent me off to Waikato Hospital. It was duly, I got to the door there, got met at the door by the head of radiology. You don't qualify, go home. So I then paid for a PT scan to be done privately. And that proved that there was an aberration in my brain of concern. There was an area around my heart was of concern. I needed to be seen by a gastro specialist. My stomach was wrong. And he looked at my skin because by then it was a total mess with lead skin. I was having another bout of lead skin. And you need to be seen by a good dermatologist. To this day, none of those have been resolved. They've been blocked. I have been blocked and denied medical help. So from 1980, I started taking psyllium as advised by the orthopedic surgeon who did repair my broken neck and vitamin C. In 2012, I was advised by a medical chap to go into lipospheric vitamin C, which I now take 3,000 units a day. And I take a total of 20 grams of psyllium a day. That's an awful lot of fiber. I'm taking other medications to help with heart conditions and the liver and bits and pieces. It's costing me in excess of $700 a week that I pay for out of natural medications. I'm determined to fight to get the truth.
Are you alone in this battle, Brian?
Well, there's no one else there. They're all dead. But one of the guys...
But are you living alone?
Yes, living alone. Oh, the other problem is from 1965, I was sexually dysfunctional. I met another... My first marriage broke up after I thumped my wife, unfortunately. It was very distressing. I still feel guilty, terrible guilt over that. It wasn't my fault, but I did the damage. I went to the men's clinic in Auckland to see if they could do anything to help me with my erectile problems, and they said it's the most damaged penis we've ever seen. The blood cavities are completely damaged. They said, we can give you an injection. You could use it twice a week immediately prior to... having sexual intercourse, but you'll be careful how you use it. It's very strong. Well, my proposed new wife didn't like the thought of that, and we did get married, but we lived in separate bedrooms. And as I say, I haven't had the sexual life of a man since the late 1965, 59 years.
I don't know what to
not
say.
Not very nice. Some nights I lie in bed and cry in frustration. It's horrible. I get very frustrated that I get accused of being a conspiracist. It's all a conspiracy. All my medical records have been destroyed. All of my trade marine papers in the ministry, in the marine department, they mysteriously had a fire in the filing room, and my files were some of the ones that got destroyed. They've gone. I just don't exist.
And they're just waiting for you to pass away.
Oh, I think they'll probably have a celebration when I do pass away, but I'm determined to hang in here as long as I can to get the truth. I mean, I'm struggling to make ends meet financially. I have a problem. And now with the cost of chelation treatment that I'm getting on, I'm spending somewhere, that's up around about $1,500 a month. And I've only got the pension to live on. It doesn't leave a lot for food. So I cook very carefully and I do the best I can. I can't do my, I have a problem doing housework. My stomach is so sore. I believe I've got a divided pancreas through lead. I've got a huge cyst growing on my right kidney. I've got damage in the liver, the spleen, and the colon, and the bowel. Some days I have a bad day and I might have 14, 13, 14 bowel movements in a day. Really, I can't get off the toilet. Sometimes I'm just stuck there. I've got to be careful where I go because if I'm driving anywhere where I'm not near a toilet, I put a wad of paper towels in my underpants so that if I do have a wee accident, it's I've got some form of control. It's not very nice.
And your records were destroyed, employment records destroyed in 1977.
Everything is gone.
And they said, we thought you were dead.
Yep, I was supposed to be dead.
Because everyone working there is dead.
Yep, dead.
And it
I'm
wasn't,
happy to bring, I, it I've got archive
even,
files.
It wasn't even part of New Zealand, in a sense.
No, the refinement was a customs bonded area. I talked to medical practices in the Whangarei, Waipu, Ruakaka area. They still have no knowledge of a lead plant being there. And I said, in other words, a person comes in with oddball tumours and they finally die of pneumonia and it's death by on the certificate of pneumonia following unidentified tumours. And he said, yeah, that's right. We've got to do something on the death certificate. Here's another bluey. In 2007, Royal Dutch Shell vacated New Zealand. From 2003 to 2006, they cleaned up a lead dump that they had on the corner of their the plant grounds adjacent to Bream Bay Beach, where all the tank cleanings used to be put to oxidise, so they said. Well, you know, you tip something onto sand, it goes down through it. It's killed all the shellfish along Bream Bay Beach. It used to be rich in tuatuas. Mirebank was solid of cockles. The scallops out on the end, there's an inner bank in Bream Bay, abounded in scallops, they've all gone. They've blamed people being greedy and they've stripped it all. But however, that's not, it's toxic lead poisoning. Coming out of the refinery main stormwater drain in 2016, there's still 61 milligrams per kilo of sludge of organic lead still running out through tank leakage into the main sea drain, going out to sea, still running out from the property. There's Wynyard Wharf is another problem. Oh, hang on, we'll come back to the refinery. They're cleaning up their tank farm. So they got heavy waxy distillate from the bottom of the heavy fuel oil tanks, and they gave a subcontract to three guys who got the heavy waxy distillate, and they were scraping up the surface of the land farm, it was called, and they took it down as a preheating fuel to the TY Point smelter. In 2007, Do you remember, do you like Bluff Oysters?
No.
You know, you're not an oyster man.
No.
Well, anyway, they got a mysterious blight, and it was never been seen anywhere in the world before. And they gave it a fancy name, but they managed to get enough spat and took it down to Stewart Island, 75 miles due south. The thriving industry again, the Bluff Oysters. They've never done in the TY Bay, done a test for lead in the bay bottom in the sand bed, because that came out of the TY Point smelter, all that tetraethyl lead, and that came out, and she got burnt up and went as oxides down into the bay. Because it's got a specific gravity of about 1.6, so it's heavier than air. It's not going to blow away. They hoped it was going to blow way the heck out in the Pacific Ocean. That'd have been the end of it.
Well, Brian,
Those guys have all died.
Goodness.
That did those tank cleanings took them down to TY Point smelting. The three guys and the guy that organised them have all died of cancers. Wynyard Wharf in Auckland there, that Wynyard tank farm.
Yes.
That is extremely toxic. It is full of lead and EDB and EDC from the old tank farm. Those guys that cleaned that tank farm up, the last two of those guys died. There was 15 subbies. They did lots of service station site removals, et cetera, and removing all the tanks. They were well recognized in the job they did. They took all of their tank cleanings. The tank clean tanks were sent to the Glenbrook steel mill, and the tank cleanings, they dumped them in a dump, which is wrong. It shouldn't have happened that way, but they did. They put it in a marshland adjacent to the Waikato River. 2.5 years ago, I got a call from Waikato Regional Council. We want some advice. Well, you're known as the lead man. And I said, yes. They told me what it was. I said, well, you've got to find out the dump. The last two guys were dying in Middlemore Hospital in palliative care. And they said, we think what we've done was wrong. I'll tell you where that marshland is. I won't identify his farm, the farm it was on, but it's adjacent to the Waikato River, and it's just upstream from where Auckland Water's new pickup is on the Waikato River. And what they've done is to try and consolidate it, they've built a clay bank up on the edge of the river, and put clay on the marshland, and now it's and then soil on the top of that, and it's now a farm paddock. It's a waiting time bomb. There was, do you remember, about 2.5 years ago, there was a three villagers out from Dunedin got lead poisoning?
No.
It featured in the news. And there was the locals all did like an army of volunteers, and there's all this flotsam and jetsam went out of this river out onto the coastline outside Otago, Dunedin. And they cleaned up the beaches. They did a wonderful job. But then not long after, there's three seaside villages out on the coast, and they all got lead poisoning. Now, I had a reasonable relationship with Dr. Reed at Otago University, or University of Otago. I said, Malcolm, I said, you've got some people in Dunedin Hospital with lead poisoning. And he said, yes. Yes, he said, there's quite a few. I said, get some urine samples and check for diethyl lead. He phoned me back 3 days. He said, yes, he said, they've all got high diethyl lead readings. I said, well, there was a landfill upstream of that river got eroded and all the flotsam and jetsam, and I suspect that there was tank cleaning that had been improperly buried in that landfill site. I was dead on the money. It was absolutely right. That's where it had come from. And I think Ministry of Health portrayed and said it was the plumbing that's been used in those old houses has caused their lead poisoning. But all of a sudden, it just suddenly happened. A bit strange. Yeah.
Brian, we're going to have to...
And terrible story.
It is a terrible, terrible story. It's a frightening story. What has happened to you is unbelievable.
Well, I've got records to prove every word.
Oh, no, I believe you. I believe you. I'm actually speechless.
I'm sorry. I apologize if I've disturbed you.
I'm very disturbed.
Well, but you shouldn't be in my shoes, sir.
I shouldn't be apologizing to me. We should be apologizing to you.
Well, I'd like some help and recognition by ACC, but I said they're wrong. They should be taken and held to account.
They're clearly wrong. I just looked up Thompson and Clark, and here's a report on them. This is a security or surveillance company. A former long-term security intelligence service officer is running private intelligence operations for the controversial private investigation company Thompson & Clark. This includes the tracking and monitoring of ex-members of the Exclusive Brethren, as reported by the Radio New Zealand yesterday. The former intelligence officer, known only by his first name Jerry, uses skills and surveillance techniques while working for over 30 years for the NZSIS to assist Thompson & Clark's private clients. This includes covert surveillance teams, tailing cars and watching houses, photographing people in public places and extensive monitoring of social media. Covert car tracking devices have also been used. And I discovered that Thompson and Clark, they were the crowd run by two ex-police officers who got into trouble because they were infiltrating with their staff into environmental groups and being paid by state-owned enterprises. So these are the guys you think are keeping an eye on you too?
One of their employees contacted me and said supposedly he was a lead victim. I've still got his three phone numbers that he used. I kept them. At first I thought he was genuine, and then I thought, no, this is wrong. This is wrong. He knows too much on the wrong side of the coin, this guy. And I haven't heard from him. I disassociated with him. But I also got, through Spark, through their technicians, they put a tracer on my modem, on my computer. And I've got IPO addresses attacking my computer that were SIS equipment from Wellington.
There you go.
And it's quite possible they're monitoring this phone call now.
Yes. Oh, well, we're out online, but this is the best form. This is the best disinfectant is sunlight, and so we're going to shine the sun on this. This is the most extraordinary story, and it's recorded for all time, Brian.
Well, it's horrible what's happened.
There's
people out there suffering now.
It is absolutely horrible, and people have died and are suffering and have no clue.
We're still not doing any health checks on aircraft mechanics, race car mechanics, tanker drivers that are still distributing it, aircraft service people that are still handling the damn product. Like a pilot, every morning before he flies his plane, he has to drain a little fuel from his tank. Often they drain it onto their hand to check there's no water in the bottom of the fuel tank. Correct? That is procedure. That happens every day. And it's still, they've got no idea what they're working with.
Well, I had no idea.
No idea at all. I've talked to guys about it. I talked to an old tanker driver, and I just met him casually on the street and got talking. And he said, I had a couple of wisdom teeth out just the other day, and I had a funny sweet taste in my mouth. I said, that's lead, pal. I said, you get back to your doctor, you want a blood lead test done, and if necessary, you're on chelation therapy, and you must do it now. It's just not known, not recognised.
Well, before you go, and we're not going to let you go, you're going to stay as part of our community, Brian. But before you go, I want to
I'd be honoured.
Oh,
I'd be honoured. Thank you very much.
We're honoured to have you. And what you've been through, but your research is amazing. Here are some comments come in. Wow. Just well, Rodney and Brian. I don't I have never heard a story like that in my life. He needs to write a book about his life. What a story. I just don't know what else to say. Just unbelievable. And yet, I totally believe it. Here's another.
Well, I have.
Another listener. This is one of the most...
I feel quite emotional.
I bet. Me too. This is one of the most distressing interviews I have heard. It is appalling how Brian has been treated. From Karina. Thank you for this very interesting interview. New Zealand has a very bad history with destroying records. Thompson and Clark was the company who spied and harassed 1080 activists a few years ago. Many blessings,
that's right.
Many blessings to this amazing man for his incredible survival story. Oh my God, yes, Thompson and Clark are New Zealand's private government spooks. We are more than officially corrupt. Oh my God, my dad, Brock, B-R-O-C, worked at the refinery fixing parts. His health had a slow decline and ended with dementia. He was an amazing father. He was also a diesel engineer prior to the refinery. This is an amazing listen to.
Well, can I give you one figure from the Duke University? They've done, I'm sorry, I'm a bit emotional. They've done an assessment of the American population and people that were born from 50 to 1950 and 1990, they're the ones they've looked at. And 53% of them will have some form of serious neurological disease. That'll be the termination of their life, 53%. And we used over double. Now, late last year, the Ministry of Health said they were disturbed that there was over 1.3 million cases of neurological disease in New Zealand. It's very worrying. Lead's the reason. Lead is the reason that's happening. In smoking, they don't talk about it, but the worst chemical in tobacco was lead. And that came from the ground down near Kaikoura where the tobacco farms were, and they were getting lead out of the ground. And they were inhaling it into their lungs, and that is one of the worst toxins that they're putting into their lungs, smoking.
Well, Brian, we've got to move along, but you're part of us now. I've got a lovely text from someone, the listener, saying, please let us know how we can help Brian. Absolutely heartbreaking. Feeling another text, feeling sad for this man. I'm speechless too. And I think he needs people behind him to help him, get the help he needs, especially with ACC. Rodney, how can we support
him? Thank you very much.
Can RCR start a GoFundMe? You got a lot of support now, Brian.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you so much.
No, thank you. Thank you for having an amazing human spirit to go through what you have gone through, to keep yourself alive, to keep yourself fighting all alone, and then to come on and bless us on the show by sharing your story.
I'm quite emotional. Thank you very much.
We all are. You've touched our hearts.
I swear on the Bible what I've said is the whole truth and nothing but the truth.
We know.
Thank you very much indeed. I'd be happy to bring my books to Auckland that I've
I'm way down the bottom of the South Island. What we might do, Brian, is we might pop you on for 10 minutes in a week or so when you're not so emotional and just have a catch-up.
I'd be honoured to talk to you.
Well, I don't want to leave you feeling discarded. So we'll be in touch.
Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you. There you go. What a story. Just when you think that you can't be rendered speechless by the horrible things that can happen, we hear that story about lead. at Marsden Refinery, a part that wasn't even in New Zealand, supposedly. Records destroyed, a man hounded, and a man denied, and so many people did. Oh my goodness. You're listening to Reality Check Radio. It's Real Talk with Rodney Hyde. And I think we've just had the realest talk we've ever had.
You're listening to Real Talk on RCR, Reality Check Radio.